Begin the current daf Masechta Gittin daf Peches. Begin 5 lines daf at the top of the Amud. Where the Gemara continues quoting from a Mishnah on the previous daf, where the Mishnah was discussing the halachas of the previous Mishnahs, where it's critical where the witnesses sign on a get. So the Mishnah said, Chasmu Eidim Bereisha daf. If let's say the witnesses sign on the top of the page of Chul etc. or on the side of the page, it's going to be puzzle. It has to be written inside the get on the bottom of the get. Then that's the place where it's going to validate the writing of the text of the get and say it's a get kasha. Now on this halacha the Gemara asks, Ini, is that really so? But v'harav chasim natsad, Rav would sign not on the bottom, he would sign on the side. So we see that it doesn't have to be just on the bottom, it could be even on the side. Yet our Mishnah says clearly it can't be on the side. So the Gemara explains, chasim over there by Rav is b'shegagoy, is with the roof, meaning the top of the letters of Rav's signature was klapik sav, was towards the writing, the text of the get itself, where there, most definitely, he was signing in regards to this get. So even though it's on the side, it's kosher. The halach of our Mishnah was talking about where the legs, the bottom of the writing of the signature is towards the text of the get. Where there, the reason why it's not kosher in our Mishnah is because maybe there was something written above the writing of the signatures, of the witness's signatures, which there was a document, and on that the witness was signing, because generally, when you're signing, you sign after the writing, and you sign, you're verifying that. So by Rav, where the top of the writing was towards the center, you're obviously signing and verifying what's inside. But the halacha of our Mishnah is talking about where the legs are towards the text. There, the side's not going to work, and that's why it's going to be invalid. But you're right, if the top of the writing was towards the center, that would show, as the bottom is, the top is towards the center. The side would also work in that way too, and that's why Rav was allowed to sign on the side. Now, that the Gemara asks, well, Elohadik Tani, but then this that we learned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said the following case. Hikif Reisha Shel Zeh B'tzad Reisha Shel Zeh. Let's say there's two gittin that are attached from the top. One long scroll, one's written from one edge, and it, meaning the top of them are in the middle and towards the outer perimeter. V'eid Me'emtz, and the witnesses are in the middle. So the Mishnah said, Shneim Pesulim, they're both going to be pasul. Now, if you learn, as we had assumed, which is because it's only kosher on the bottom, so that would make sense. But the way you just answered that, if you have the top of the writing towards a text, then it's kosher, even if it's not on the bottom, even if it's on the sides. So the Gemara asks, then let's see which one of these has that the roof of the witness's signature is klapik sav, is towards that writing, but let's kosher, and let that get be kosher, because it's definitely regarding that one that they signed. Now, the reason is because the Gemara assumes that the way the witness is signed is in the width of the parchment, just like how the order of the gittin were. Meaning you have, if you're looking at a get, at a regular piece of paper, so you have one that the edge is one end, the bottom is one end, the other one, the bottom is the other end. In the middle is where the tops are, they're connected there. And in the middle, the witness is signed. So you signed in the same direction. Just one is that they're both towards the top, but one has its top facing the other one. So the one that the top of it is facing that way, you said, like on the side, that's the one that he's signing for, so that should be the one that's kosher. Why are they both puzzle? So the Gemara says, no, because hasam de ramile, there that the witnesses that were placed between the two gittin are ki'ivra, are like a bolt, meaning the top rows, the edges of the lines of the signatures connect the two gittin like the way a bolt closes a door, where it goes opposite the airway of the doorway. That's how it extended between the two empty space of the gittin, meaning it's neither one is the top facing. It's actually perpendicular to the gittin, and that's why you say both are not going to be kosher, because now the top of it is actually facing the side, facing towards neither one. But yes, if it would be facing towards either one, then it's like our Gemara answer, like Rav would do on the side, the same thing would be on the top. It would be kosher, the one that the top of it is facing towards. Now, but the Gemara asks on this still, Ihachi, if that's the case, well, in Sefer Diktani, then our Mishnah that learned that Reshit Shalzeh B'tzad Soifi Shalzeh, we said another case. If the top of one is facing the end of another one, meaning it's one contiguous, you wrote a get, space, another get, so you have the bottom of one towards the top of the other one, ve'edim be'em, so he said the edim are in the middle. So he said that esha edim nikr misayva kasha, so the one that it's read at the end of one, which was the first one, and you have the witness assigned, then it's on the top of the next one, it's only kasha for the one that it's read with from the previous one. That the Gemara asks, but ve'edim rami ki'ivra, but if the cases of the Mishnahs are as you described, where it has different variations of the cases. But you describe the cases where that when you have between these two gittin, the witnesses are not signed in the width, they're rather signed in the length, meaning like a bold. Well, then lav bahadi hai mikri, v'lav bahadi hai mikri. Then it's actually not read with either one, because even the one that the end of it is, and then you have the witness's signature, that's not how they're signing. They're signing perpendicular. So it's not read with that. So why is that one going to be kosher? So El Rav, the Gemara says, you're right. Obviously, the answer we had originally given to the friendship between Rav and our Mishnah is incorrect. Because obviously, even if you have the top of the writing towards a get, if it's not on the bottom, let's say on the side or on the top, as we just illustrated, it's going to be pasul. Rather, Rav, when he would sign on the side, it wasn't by gittin, it wasn't by regular documents in court. Rather, it was bediski havachasim. When they would subpoena people to come to court for a court case, so the scribes would write a letter of subpoena in Rav's name, and he would sign something from the side, and that wasn't the particularity, because it's not talking about a regular shtar, a shtar, a get. Of course, it needs to be, like our Mishnah said, on the bottom after the text of the get or the shtar itself. The side, even if the top is facing towards, would be puzzle. Rav, that he used to sign from the side, that was talking about just a letter from the court, that's okay if he signs on the side. That doesn't have to be halachically like a shtar and a get to have the witnesses sign on the bottom. Now then the Mishnah continue with other cases of halachas, get shiksavi ivris v'chulu, regarding if a text of the get is written in Hebrew and the witness is signed in Greek, that's all okay. Then v'chulu, etc. Then another halacha, which we explained this sugya at length on daf ayin beis, which was ksav seifa v'eid kasher, if let's say there's only one witness on the get, which you need to have two witnesses. But together with that one witness, there's the handwriting of the scribe, where he's also verifying what's being written over here is true. So then it's going to be kosher because essentially you have two witnesses. Now that's the simple translation of the words. And there actually is an opinion like this on Shmuel, we mentioned in the previous stuff. But Amar B'Yirmiyah, he qualifies, no. It's not kesav sefer, rather chasam sefer. It's you have the signing of the scribe together with one witness. That Shanina, that's what we learned in the Mishnah, that's going to be kosher. Because then you have two witnesses. You have a one witness and also another witness. He just happens to be the scribe, but he's also signing. Now, what's the chiddush of that? So why shouldn't the scribe be allowed to be a witness? The Mishnah is coming to teach us that we shouldn't be concerned for the following scenario. Maybe the husband actually did not command that the scribe should be one of the witnesses. And if he didn't say that he should be the witness, he's not a valid witness, and then it's not a valid get. Maybe he didn't make him into witness. Rather, he told the two people, look, tell that person to be the scribe to write the text of the get. Tell two other people to sign on the text of the get. Now, the thing was that those agents were concerned that they're going to tell this guy, you're just writing, you're not signing, as if there's something wrong with him. They were embarrassed to tell him not to sign. And rather, they said, oh, he wanted you to write and to sign. And they only got one other person to sign with him, which was not what the husband had said. Now, that's the chiddush of our mission, is that we're not concerned for that. Again, as we explained on length enough, Ayin Beis, Amid Alf. Now, on that, Rav Chizki explains, Hamani, who is this Mishnah going like, that we're not concerned for that? That's Rabbi Yosihi, who again, as we explained at length over there, that he holds Mili Lemimsrin Leshliach. That is, it can't be such a case that you would have such a concern, because words cannot be given over from a husband to an agent to tell other people to do. In other words, the scribe has to hear directly from the husband what it is that he's doing. You can give over a get from shliach to shliach, which is an object, but words cannot be given over. You could tell only one person, they could do what you told them to do. You can't tell people to tell other people to do things. So therefore, if the scribe is signing, obviously he heard this from the husband himself, and therefore there's no concern, and that's why, again, it's not ksav sefer, it's chasam sefer, it's the signing of the scribe together with a witness, and therefore it's two valid witnesses, and we don't have the concern that maybe really he wasn't a witness, and just that the agents were embarrassed to tell him that, because it's going like Rabbi Yosi, who again, you can't have such a case, because mila mimson l'shliach. Now the Gemara brings a story related to this halacha that hahi kesubas chasan. There was a certain kesuba of marriage, the asu lekamei de Rav Avuh, that came in front of the Rav Avuh. Now the havayadi leilatufsa, the bezdin, the court of Rav Avuh, they recognize the text of the get. In other words, they recognize not of the get of the shtar of the document, where they recognize the writing of the scribe. They knew, oh, this is Yaakov the scribe. Ulechasimis yadi dechatzad sahad. And they also recognize one of the witnesses' signatures, but they didn't recognize the second witness's signature. So Sava Lachshus Rav Avuh thought that this should be a kosher ksuba, because this is essentially the halacha of our Mishnah. You have ksav sefer, and you have one witness. On That Omer Birmi, as he just qualified before, Chasam Sefer Sheninu. It's not kosher if you have just the writing of the scribe. It means the scribe who wrote also signed, and then you have another witness, then it's kosher. But here where you only have one witness, and you only have the writing of the scribe, that will not validate this ksuba. You would have to have a verification of the other witness too. Then the Mishnah said, Halacha, Kasav Chanechasav An Chanechasav Kasher. The Mishnah concluded by saying that if they wrote his surname, his family name, and her family name, that's also kosher to as a way of identifying who this man and woman are being divorced. Now, so on that, the Gemara brings Tarabon Gunda Braisa, the Chanichas of his Begitten, regarding this, the family name of fathers by Gittin, Ad Yudderis. The Talakama says that only works up until 10 generations, that's going to be considered the surname, the family name. In other words, as a way of identifying this person. Where if you write in a get, it's not going to be possible as if you didn't write her appropriate name or his appropriate name. Reb Shimon the Lossaim, he says, Gimel Deris Kasher. He says, no, it's only kosher if it's someone that's from three generations upward that you could use as a name that identifies this individual. But if you use a name of the fathers more than three generations upward as a family name, as a way of identifying this person, that's going to be possible. That's not any more used for the individual as an identifying feature. It's too far away to consider it, and if you write that person's name, it actually would be considered as if you're changing the appropriate name, or Yashina Shmai or Shma, and that would be an invalidation of the get. So the Gemara says, Kaman Azla Hada Am Reb Chanina, who is Reb Chanina going by when he says, Kasav Chanichas Aves Begitin, when you write the surname by Gittin Ad Gimel Deris, only works for three generations. And the Gemara says, Kaman, Reb Shimon Lazar, like we just quoted, like Reb Shimon Lazar says, it only works up until three generations. Amar Rav Huna Maikara, what's the pasuk for this opinion that only works up until three generations? Like it says in Devarim, it says ki soilid banim, that when you will give birth to children, which is the second generation, ubnei banim, and grandchildren, which are the third generations, from there on it's what the pasuk says, v'nei shantim. Meaning, although the pasuk is talking about something else, but here you see an allusion to that, where after that's already v'nei shantim, it's already old, it's not something that you relate to anymore, and therefore, to identify yourself, it only works up until three generations, but not more than that. Now, relating to this pasuk, the Gemara brings the following agada. Amir B'shu ben Levi says, Leichar ve'eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael was not destroyed, until there were seven courts, meaning seven families of kings of the Malchi Yisrael, which are not Malchi Yehuda, but rather the ten tribes, which had their own kingdom when it was split, until the seven royal courts did idol worship Beilohin, and they are Yeravim ben Nevat, Uvasha ben Ochia, Achav ben Amri, Veyehu ben Nimshi, Ufekach ben Ramal Yahu, Menachem ben Gadi, and Baishea ben Elah, till these seven royal courts did Avodah Zarah, then Eretz Yisrael was destroyed. Shneim, like it says the pasuk in Yirmiyah, it says Umlala, that it's desolate, Yeledes Hashem, the one who gave birth to the seven, Nafcha Navsha, her soul is miserable, Vashim Shabbaidim, her son has set in the middle of the day, Baisha v'chafer, embarrassed and humiliated. Now Rashi just points out, why didn't they mention also the Malchi Yehuda from the other two tribes of the tribe of Yehuda, that of those sinful monarchies? So he says because they were at the same time and they're included like as if they're the same Bazdin, it's the same reference of the Malchi Yisrael. Moreover, Rashi says, when there was a king and a son and a grandson and all the kings that came from that family are also called in one Bezdin. So obviously there were more wicked kings, but they're all included in one. So too, Shalom ben Yavish and Zechariah weren't counted as other courts, which also had sinned before the destruction of Eretz Yisrael, because they didn't rule even a year, so they weren't counted. And moreover, the same thing applies for Zimri. And another idea, Rashi says, that whereas Amri, who is the father of Achav, he was actually called as the court of Achav, which was one of the seven counted, is because actually the son Achav was more wicked than his father, so he was counted as one of the primary seven, because we said when there was a whole family, only count one, he was more wicked than his father, so therefore he's counted. And one more idea Rashi says is that the last one counted in Hashea ben Elah, it was in his days that the ten tribes were exiled from the land of Israel, and it's at that time that which was called the Churban of Eretz Yisrael, which is what the Pasuk saying, Umlolo, you led us a Shiva, which is gave birth to seven families to that of the royal court that did Avodah Zarah, and then it was destroyed. So Amar Avami says, my Kara, what's the Pasuk? So it's the Pasuk that we quoted before. Ki soilid banim uvnei vanim, when you give birth to children and to grandchildren, where, as the pasuk there continues, that v'neishantim, that you'll grow old, and v'yishchatim asisim, it'll be destruction. So we see that the churban Eretz Yisrael is after banim u'bnei banim, which Tais' interpretation of this is that kisoled is a reference to one generation, banim is two generations, b'nei is two generations, and banim is two generations, that's a reference to seven generations, where on the Masoreis Tashas brings a different interpretation, but we see the reference of seven generations, and then comes the churban of Eretz Yisrael. Now, related to this last one of the courts that Hoshea ben Ela that had done Avodah Zarah, and then the 10 tribes were exiled. So, Amalei Rav Kana v'Rav Asi l'Rav. They said to Rav, I don't understand. K'siv bei Hoshea ben Ela, it says regarding the last one, Hoshea ben Ela, in the Pasuk of Malachim Beis, it says, V'yas hara be'enei Hashem, that he did wicked in the eyes of Hashem. Rak loika malchi Yisrael, but just not as bad, as wicked as the previous Jewish kings of the 10 tribes. Now, it says right after that, Olav on him was Olah Shaman Esther Begoimer came on and then they were besieged. So the question that they're asking is, what, because he wasn't as wicked as the previous kings, that's why the punishments came in his day? What, how do you understand that continuity? How does that make sense? To the contrary, then the Trinity came in his day. So Amalahu Sarav said to them, no, because Asin Pardisois, those watchmen, Shaheshav Yerav Maladrachim, from the first wicked king, Yerovim, when he separated from Malchi Yehuda to Malchi Yisrael, they wanted to make sure that no one should go up to Eretz Yisrael, because then they're going to get attracted to Malchi Yehuda, and he wants them to be separated. So Yerovim went and made watchmen on the roads, Kadesh Layal Yisrael L'Regel, that the Jewish people shouldn't go and be Mekayim the Mitzvah three times a year of making pilgrimages up to Yerushalayim, because then they're going to be coming into the Malchi Yehuda area. Now, Bo Hoshea Bitlan, finally in the times of Hoshea, he came and he nullified this. He stopped this. He took away the watchmen. But still the Jewish people were not being Oy L'Regel under three Yom Tovim. Oh, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Eisim Shanim Shlo Olu Yisrael L'Regel. Those years that the Jewish people did not go up three times a year to the Beis HaMikdash, since no one was protesting over there, there was no more watchmen, and they still didn't go up. So then they're going to go into exile, and Yelchu B'Shevi, they're going to go into captivity, correlating to those years. So exactly because he wasn't as wicked, and he took it away, that's why they went into exile, because the Jewish people still didn't go up and do Aliyah L'Regel. A similar type of question and answer, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chisda Amar Ukva. Amar Lo, and some say it was Amar Rav Chisda Amar B'Yirmiyah. Darsh Meremer had expounded, how do we understand the pasuk in Daniel that says, V'yishkad Hashem al ra, Hashem was swift to bring the punishment, and he brought on us, because Hashem, our God, is righteous. So the question is, Mishum de tzadik Hashem likein, because Hashem does charity, is righteous to us, v'yishkad Hashem al ra v'yivyeh oleinu, so that's why he was swift to bring evil and bring it upon us. What does that mean? To the contrary, tzadik is when Hashem is kind to us. How do we understand that? So, Ella, rather, tzedakah us HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, it was charity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing the Jewish people, Shehigla Golas Tzidkiyahu, that he caused the exile of Tzidkiyahu, which was the destruction of Yerushalayim, which was when finally all the Jewish people went to exile, because there were actually different phases of the exile, into Bavel, Vadayin Golas Yechanya, and that there was still the exile of Yechanya, who was Yoyachin, who he had gone into the exile before Tzidkiyahu 11 years prior, Kayemis, that those people of the diaspora were still around. Meaning that was the charity where he went and he quickly destroyed his Beis HaMikdash so that the generation of Tzidkiyah should go down to Bavel when the Talmidei Chacham who had gone down already in the Golas Yechani was still around, that they could teach Torah to those who were going into the exile after them, because the majority of the Chachmei HaTorah had gone to exile already previously with Yechani. The Chsiv Bei Begolas Yechani, like it says in the exile of Yechani, it says the Pasuk Melachim Beis, it says HaCharish, the craftsmen Vamazgir and the gatekeepers, Elif were 1,000 now. Doesn't literally mean craftsmen and gatekeepers. Rather, as the Gemara explains, Charash is a reference not from craftsmen, but rather as a deaf mute. Shebeshop shepeischem, because at the time when these Talmidei Chacham, when these Talmudic scholars would open up their mouths, Nasa kol kacharash, and everyone else would become like deaf mute. No one else could stand up to their great wisdom. So to mazgu, when it says the gatekeepers, is the terminology of kivin shesoigrin. Since they would close, in other words, when they would close the discussion of a halacha, mean to say because they were closed about it, they didn't know how to respond to the question, shuvim paischa, no one would open up the discussion anymore because if they didn't know the answer, no one else is knowing the answer. Vakama, that's what the pasuk says. And how many of the Tamina Chacham had gone down already earlier with Yechonya? They were 1,000, they were 1,000. So the charity was that he quickly got the rest down so that they could still learn from those Tamina Chacham before they pass on that there is the continuity of the Messiah of the Jewish people. That's one interpretation of the tzedakah. Ulama, he says that the charity was that Hashem was swift to bring the evil at the end of 850 years, which is Shehiktim Shtei Shonim Levenoishantem, which was that 2 years before the Gematria of Neishantem, which was 852. Because had Hashem let the Jewish people remain until the amount of Neishantem of 852 years, then it would have been fulfilled the rest of the pasuk, which is Ki Ovi Teveinu. It would have been the obliteration and destruction totality of the Jewish people. And Hashem didn't want that to happen. So to prevent it, he quickly got them out before there was Veneshantim 2 years earlier. That's the tzedakah that Hashem did by having the Ra come onto us before its necessary time. Now, as we continue on to Amud Beis, the Gemara makes the following reflection. So Amar Vach Bar Yaakov Shema Mino, what we can infer from this is that Meheira Demari Alma, the swiftness of the master of the world, is Tamni Meyev Chamshe Betarta, who is 852 years, which is like the Gematria, the numerical value of Veneshantim, that each letter has a numerical value. Vav is 6, and Nun is 50, and Vav is 6, and Shin is 300, Nun is 50, Tav is 400, and Mem is 40. Because it says, Ki Ovei Tevei Din Mahir, the pasuk there says, because you will be quickly liquidated, you'll be quickly get rid of. Now, what's quickly? Is it Veneshantim? It's 852. So we see when Hashem says swift judgment that he's going to punish Jewish people, it doesn't mean right away. It means an amount of 852 years. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again, continuing the halachas of Gittin. The Mishnah tells us, get mu'usa, a get that was forcefully written for a husband to divorce his wife. So the Mishnah says it depends. Be Yisrael, if it was a Jewish court that forced him to give a get, kasher is going to be kasher. But if it's non-Jewish court that's forcing him to write a get to his wife, it's going to be invalid. Now, the Mishnah says, however, regarding non-Jews, they could hit him and they could tell him, do what the Jewish court is telling you, and then the Mekasha then is going to be a kasher again. Now, the Gemara clarifies these halachas. Amar Nachman Amar Shmuel says, get hamu'usa b'Yisrael. Regarding a forced get in a Jewish court, so as our Mishnah said, kiddin, if it's done according to halacha, which is, for example, as we learned other places, there's halacha called yetziv yitn ksuba. There are certain times when he has to divorce her and give her ksuba. Or let's say it was a forbidden marriage where he has to get divorced. So when the Jewish court is forcing him according to law, Jewish law, then kasher, it's kasher like our Mishnah said. Now, shalaykedin, if it's actually not according to what the Jewish law is, they're just forcing him to divorce his wife, then pasul, it's obviously an invalid get, which doesn't permit her to get remarried to someone else. But upaisel, it will still invalidate her from marrying a kohen as a grusha because of what's called the reich get. It has the scent of a get. It has all the trappings. It has all the appearances as a get. So although in halacha it's not kosher because it was forced, but it will invalidate her from getting married to a kohen, even if let's say she gets widowed ultimately from her husband. Now ubaivdi kachavim, however, regarding non-Jews, if kedin, if they do it according to law what the Jewish law is, then pasul, it's invalid, as our Mishnah said, but upaisel, it will invalidate her from marrying a kohen. Now, shalaykedin, but if let's say the non-Jew is doing it not according to Jewish law, then afil recha get aimboy, then there's not even a cent of a get, it won't even invalidate her from kohuna. That's the halacha of Rav Nachman in the name of Shmuel. That the Gemara asks, monavshach, what is it that you want? Either way that you say, it's hard to understand regarding that they said regarding a non-Jewish court, if they do according to Jewish law, it's going to be pasul, it's not going to be valid, but it will be paisel. It will invalidate her from marrying a kohen. So the Gemara asks, if non-Jewish court has the ability of enforcing the Jewish law to force a Jewish man according to the din to divorce his wife, so it's kasher and namel is kasher. So why does our Mishnah say, and as being quoted over here, say that the get's going to be pasul? It should even be a kasher again. And ilav b'nei asuyininu, if a non-Jewish court is not able to, in halacha, to force a Jewish man to divorce his wife, well then mitzal leilifsal, then it shouldn't even invalidate her from marrying a tekun. It shouldn't have any substance to it. It shouldn't even be like a reich get. So why do we say it's pasul upaisal? So Amrav Masharshi, Rav Masharshi says, dvar Torah, according to biblical law, get mu'usa ba'ibdi kechavim kasher. He says, the get is the husband has to write it. So we don't care if the Jewish court forces him or the non-Jewish court forces him. If it's done according to Jewish law, even the non-Jewish court, according to halacha, according to biblical law, could force him and it's going to be kasher. Now, umatam amru pasal, so that's why for sure it's going to be paisal her from marrying a tikkunah, because it's definitely a valid get. Now, why do they say, however, that it's not going to be valid for her to be able to remarry with? Why isn't it ultimately a valid get? That's rabbinic. Because we don't want any woman that desires so to go ahead and rely and hire non-Jewish ruffians to go ahead and force her husband to beat him up until he goes and divorces her, and she'll come from a roundabout way, and she'll be able to get out from staying married to her husband, not according to the halacha, because that's not being done in the appropriate way, because she's hiring them and just saying to leave, he consents, and he says he's going to write a get. So since we don't want every woman to do that, because that obviously would not be halachically appropriate, so because of that, we never let a non-Jewish court, who obviously could be imposed upon differently than the Jewish court, so therefore, any non-Jewish court, we say, although halachically they could force, but we say, no, non-Jews are not allowed into this picture about forcing, even according to, on their own judgment, to enforce Jewish law. Now, the Gemara asks on this interpretation of Mishnah, if that's the case, that according to biblical law, really, that they are appropriate to enforce the get, well then, shaloi kadin, then why did you say the second half of Rav Nachman and Mishmul's halacha, that if they did it not according to Jewish law, that a filarecha get aim, but then there's not even the scent of a get. Why? They should have the same status as when the Jewish court does not according to Jewish law. That umifsal nami livsa, at least let it also invalidate her from marrying into to marry a kayin, which is the same halacha of shleikedin by Yisrael. Because since you said that biblically they're able to enforce a get just like a Jewish court, and by a Jewish court you said when they do it shleikedin, yes, it's possible, but it will be paisal. So why don't you say the same thing by the non-Jewish court? So El Rav, the Gemara says, Hadra Mesharshe Bedusi. This halacha, this interpretation of Mesharshe is a mistake, where for sure a non-Jewish court cannot force a Jewish man to give a get to his wife. They cannot preside over these proceedings. Now, so rather B'taimimai, so how do we understand then this halacha of Nachanam Omer Shmuel, that when they do it Kedin, it's possible but it's paisal? So the Gemara explains, Kedin, when the non-Jewish court does it according to Jewish law, meaning they force a man according to Jewish law, they know the Jewish law, and they force him to give the get, so although it's not a get, because the Jewish court biblically cannot enforce a get, but still the rabbis decreed that if they do force him to give such a get, that she will be possible for marrying a tikkuna, because b'kedin di Yisrael michlef, it could be confused with when it is being done according to Jewish law and being forced by the Jewish court in an appropriate way. Because people are going to come to say, wait a second, by a Jewish court, when they also force it according to Jewish law, it's not going to make her possible for marrying a kohen, just like we find by the non-Jewish courts. Now, that's not true, because when the Jewish court forces, it's actually even a totally kosher get, and she could even get married with this. So therefore, when the non-Jewish court is doing kedin, you could think that it's the same thing as a Jewish court doing kedin, that you can never force, even though that's Jewish law. What's wrong? Jewish court, non-Jewish court, who cares? There is a difference. A person might not know that. So therefore, shalei kedin of a non-Jewish, kedin of a Jewish, of a non-Jewish court, we say, okay, it'll passel so that people know that you could force a get, even though it's not going to be valid because non-Jewish court, because we don't want to confuse it when a Jewish court does a kedin. Shalei kedin, but when a non-Jewish court is doing it, and it's also not being done according to the Jewish law, b'kedin Yisrael le'michlev, that doesn't get confused with a Jewish court who's doing it according to the Jewish law. So therefore, we don't have to say that it's even going to passel. It doesn't even have a reich get at all. Now, Rashi addresses the question, if you're going to say, but it should be confused with shalei kedin of a Jewish court, because people are going to say, wait a second, just like we find that when the non-Jewish court does it shalei kedin, it doesn't even passel at all from kahuna, it doesn't even have a reich get, then people are going to think that shalei kedin of a Jewish court also shouldn't invalidate. But we said before that a Jewish court that does it shalei kedin, it at least passels her, it invalidates her from marrying it to a kayin. So Rashi says that shalei kedin of a Jewish court is really only a gezeira, because really shalei kedin has no validity whatsoever. It wasn't done according to Jewish law. Now, we say that it's going to passel from kahuna because that we might confuse it in the case of when it is done kedin. Now, to say Shalai Kedin of a non-Jewish court because of Shalai Kedin of a Jewish court because of a Kedin of a Jewish court, that's what's called a Gezer L'Gezer, and a Gezer L'Gezer, we don't make such a decree. We don't do secondary level Gezeris of the Rabbanon. And again, now that's how we understand the halacha of Shmuel, which is when they do it Kedin, really they have no validity. But we're going to say that that's why it's possible. And we're going to say that's Paisel, it makes her invalid from marrying a Tekuna, so that we don't confuse it with a Jewish court who does a Kedin, where there it's totally valid when the Jewish court forces the man to divorce his wife. Now, the Gemara brings a story related to this halacha that Abaya Ashkechel Rabbi Yosef. Abaya encountered Rabbi Yosef. The Yosef v'koma asa giti. He was presiding over a get that they were forcing a man to divorce his wife according to Jewish law. So Amalei Abaya said to Rav Yosef, but bohanan had yoytis anan. We are what's called common people. In other words, we're not what's called mumchen, people that are proficient and that are what's called smuchen, ordained, because the pasuk calls judges Elohim, which requires that they have smicha, ordination, from a previous generation going back all the way to Moshe from Sinai. And there, as the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Yudal Menaf, there is no ordination, there's no smicha in Chutz Laaretz, which we are here in Bavel. B'tanya, we learned in the Braisa, the Hayyub Tar Fanoim, he said, wherever you find gatherings of non-Jews, so even though it's, let's say, their Supreme Court, where their laws are like the Jewish laws, you're not allowed to go ahead and present for them and preside over the Jewish law proceedings, because like it says the pasuk in Shemais in Parashat Mishpatim, it says ve'ela mishpatim asher tasim lefneim. These are the laws which you should place in front of them. Who's them? So that, as Rashi explains, is going back on the 70 elders that went up with Moshe Rabbeinu onto Har Sinai by Matan Torah. Whereas the pasuk says that vel Moshe amar alei v'garmi, that it was said to Moshe to go up. And Rashi says, although this parasha, which we're quoting over here, this pasuk in Parashat Mishpatim, was after Matan Torah, which is in Parashat Yisrael, actually was said before Matan Torah. And then they built the Mizbeach, and they went up and brought the oilus and shlam, and it's with that blood that they brought the bris, it's just in muktim u'chabat Torah. So this is actually reference to the Shem Zekenim that were there with Moshe Rabbeinu, which tells us, lefneim v'loy lefnei avdei kechavim, that you could only present the court cases in front of the Jewish court and not in front of the non-Jewish court. Now, that's one interpretation in that lefneim. Now, Dava Acher, another interpretation, which is what Abaya was asking from, it also says lefneim in front of them, the Zekenim, v'loy lefnei had yaitis. It could only be in front of those who have smicha, not in front of common people. Now, me and you, although we might be talmid chacham, but we're in Bavel, we're in Chutzlaz. The Chutzlaz, there's no smicha. If there's no smicha, we can't go ahead and enforce halachas like of forcing a get, which has to be someone that has smicha, and we don't have that. So Amalei, Rabbi Yisrael said to Abai, he says, you're right, but Anan Shlichusayu, we are fulfilling the agency of those who have smicha in Eretz Yisrael, Kavdin, and that's what we're doing because they give us permission to enforce these halachas. Midi Dehava, just like it is regarding monetary law, Ahaydois Valvois, regarding people that they have admissions for certain things that they owe or certain loans, where we do their shlichus, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, in the beginning of the Masechet, of Beis Mabeis, where although we don't have smicha in Bavel, but we could fulfill as a shliach of them and their Tzitzel who have smicha, we could be their shluchim over here, enforce their things, and therefore the same thing applies over here by a get, where you're right, you have to have smicha to be ma'asa by a get, but we're the shluchim of those in Eretz Yisrael. Now, that the question is, if that's the case, well, the gezeilas v'chavolas nami, then the sin should apply to theft and to damages, where we should also, quote, be their agents. Yet on that, we say in the first sugi, Masechta Sanhedrin, that no, for those halachas, you need to have three mumchen, and we don't have that in Bavel, and therefore we can't preside over it. Why? Why don't you say for that we're also considered their shluchim? The Gemara answers, Kiyav din shlichusayu, when are we, quote, fulfilling their agency? It's been milsa de shlich, it's by something that's common, which are loans, and so to a get, which that happens. But milsa de loy shlich, loy av din shlichusayu, but by something that's not so common, by damages and theft, which are not so common, there we don't say that we're doing their agency, and therefore it's in that area that we're not going to be valid because we're not the shluchim. But regarding this halacha, abim ma'asa get, you could even do it in Chutz Laaretz because we're, quote, considered the shluchim, the agents of those who do have smicha in Eretz Yisrael. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again, continue on the halachas relating to getin. So the Mishnah tells us regarding a single woman, that yatzishma be'ir mukudashis, that there's rumors, the word is out, that this girl, this woman, is engaged, that she got engaged this day to that guy. Now, as the Gemara will explain from the Amiram, that there are recognizable signs that this rumor is true, says the Mishnah, harizu mukudashis, so she's considered engaged. In other words, she's not allowed to marry anyone else until she gets a get from that individual. Now, let's say Mugureshes. Let's say there's the rumors that she's divorced, where the assumption of the Gemara originally is that what the Mishnah is telling us is that if a woman married to a Kohen, suddenly the word gets out that her husband divorced her today, says the Mishnah, I raise the Mugureshes. So she's considered divorced, and what that means to say is that she's forbidden to remain married with her husband because a Kohen is forbidden with a woman that's Mugureshes, even if he remarried her. Now, as Rashi points out, this has to be the interpretation, because regarding saying that the rumors are true that she's divorced and that she'd be permitted to go ahead and marry someone else, that for sure you can't say that because of a rumor that we would permit a married woman to marry other people. Rather, it's just that we consider her Mugureshes, that she's forbidden to her husband. And that's what the Gemara is going to ask. V'asri la gavra, what? We're going to make her forbidden to her husband that's a kohen because of rumors that we hear that she's divorced? That's what the Gemara is going to address as the question. Now, the Mishnah qualifies that this halacha is true, that we believe the rumors, at least in regards to astringency. That's ubavachle hesham amasla, as long as there is not what's called an amasla. Amasla is the term related to the word mushal, amasla, which is as long as that the rumor that there was regarding her getting engaged or getting divorced doesn't have a mushal, a reasoning, something that would break the rumor, that would tamper with what we hear to be seemingly a very valid rumor. Now, Ezi Amasla, what would be considered an Amasla? Something that would say that, oh, it's not necessarily true, this rumor that she's not engaged and she's not divorced. For example, let's say the rumor was, Girish ish plenius ishle al tanai. Yeah, the word got out that he had divorced her, but it was on condition. That would be what's called like a shaver, which is usually word of receipt, which it would be something that would break. It would break the rumor of the divorce because maybe the condition wasn't fulfilled. So even if there is a rumor, we don't have to believe it and make her forbidden to her husband. Or let's say, Zarek la kiddushah, suffer karv la, suffer karv la. Let's say the rumor says she was engaged because a situation was that it's not clear if the get was closer to him or closer to her. Again, zuhi amasla, this is something that would break the rumor of the kiddushin, because even then it's not clear that it was closer to her, so we wouldn't say based on the rumor that she's engaged. And again, as Rashi says, you could say either one, the opposite. You could say, Zarek la girisheho, suffer karv la, suffer karv la, or you could say regarding the kiddushin that it was al tanai, either one when it's not clearly 100% what the rumor is saying, it's even there's something that could break that rumor, then we won't make a stringency even based on that rumor. But now the Gemara asked the question that we alluded to in the Mishnah. Vastrin la gavra? What? This is going in on the case of Mugureshes, which again, as we had assumed that it's talking about when a woman's married to a kohen, where the rumor is that her husband divorced her. So the Mishnah says, oh, we have to be concerned for the rumor, and she's forbidden to her husband. So the Gemara asks, we're really going to make a woman forbidden to her husband because of the rumor? But Va'amar Rav Ashi said, Kol Kala, any rumor that goes out about a woman, the Basa Nisuin with a rumor only comes out after that she's married, and the rumor wasn't there before she was married, Loi Chashina Lei, would not concern for the rumor. So for example, if let's say a woman's married to a Kohen, and then after she's married, the rumor gets out that she was a Zaino or that she was a Grusha, which is forbidden to a Kohen. Says Rav Ashi, we do not make her leave the marriage with her husband. Only if it's obviously clear testimonial, where then, of course, if this aid is a zayna or a grusha, is forbidden to her husband. The problem is here, we're talking about a married woman, so how could we say, based on the rumor, that she'd be forbidden to her husband? When Rav Ashi says clearly, any rumor after Nisun, we're not concerned for. So the Gemara says, you're right, hachikama. This that the Mishnah was talking about a case when there's a rumor that a woman is divorced, is going back on the ratio, it's one long case. Regarding that single woman, we said that Yatzeh Shma Be'ir Mukadeshes, we said that if the word goes out that she's engaged, so we said we're concerned, and Harizah Mukadeshes, as a stringency, we have to consider her as if she is married to that guy that we heard the rumor that she was engaged, and she would be forbidden to get married to anyone else besides this man. Then that's what the Mishnah continues and says, that Mikudeshes Umugureshes, let's say this woman, who the rumor was originally came out that she was engaged, then there's a rumor that she got divorced from that same man, the one that there was a rumor that she was engaged to, is Mugureshes. That's the case that the Mishnah is describing. That the Gemara continues on top of Testament Aleph. That's what the Mishnah was saying, Harizim Mugureshes. Then we will consider her divorced, and she actually will be permitted to get married to anyone. My Tam, what's the reason? Because Koil, the rumor that we were originally concerned for, which didn't let her get married to anyone else because of a rumor that she was engaged to, you have a Shevara Ima, you have what breaks it with it. You have another rumor that counteracts it, that says that he divorced her. So even if we're going to believe that rumor, there's a rumor negating that. So that's why she'll be permitted, again, just like the, similar to the halacha of a masla, where if there's something breaking the rumor, we'll allow her, we won't consider it as a stringency. That's what the case of the Mishnah is talking about. It's not talking about a regular married woman that there's a rumor that she was a grusha, that she forbidden to her husband. Because of course not. That Rav Ashi said, if it starts after marriage, we're not concerned for that. It's talking about the continuation of the first case, where there was a rumor, Mekadeshes, which we're concerned for. Then the rumor comes out on that woman that she's Mugareshes from him. Then that's the case where she would be permitted to marry anyone else, again, because you have a kail, which Shevara Imoy.